I began teaching at the Rhinelander School of the Arts. And I taught there for some 32 years. And our kids were something like 7, 8, and 9 when we started going there in 1971. In fact, I've taught creative writing now for 40 plus years. And I have discovered that there's something magical about having a writing class, I expect any class, but a writing class, which I do, close to water. And I've taught on Washington Island. I still teach at the Clearing in Ellison Bay, which is right on the waters of Green Bay. And of course at Rhinelander, the lakes were everywhere, and water was one of the attractions, I think, that brought some of the students to my classes. I discovered that sort of accidentally by realizing that something was going on that I couldn't figure out, that I couldn't understand, the relationship of people to water. The creative juices that began flowing, and this sounds crazy maybe, but as people associated with water, watched it, played in it, did whatever they wanted with it, or simply wrote about it even, that there was something mysterious happening. And I still haven't figured exactly what that relationship is, but it's an important one. And I firmly believe, and I've taught this for years, that everybody has a creative side to them. It's often dormant and not being expressed. But water and the presence of water, in my judgment, will help to release that creativity that sits there and is waiting to be released. As the kids got older and grew up and had jobs and eventually married, Ruth and I were there alone for several years while I was teaching. I think it was my daughter Susan said, well, wouldn't it be fun if we brought our spouses and our kids to Rhinelander to experience what we experienced as kids? And so that's what we did. Today, 16 years later, we are still doing that. And there's something like 15 of us when we're all together, grandkids, now 2 great grandkids. It's to bring the family together in a way that we could never have anticipated. And water was a key to it, being on a lake where they could fish and water ski and just sit and watch the water. And what's interesting, sometimes we think that the kids and the grandkids want to be busy all the time doing things, but every so often I catch one of them, sometimes several of them, just sitting by themselves watching the water. So water has been the glue, if that makes sense, in bringing the family together, which we do once a year for a week or more, and it has been absolutely wonderful. We rent a boat, so those who want to water ski can do that. This year, the most fun thing the kids did was kayaking. They were 4 kayaks, and they were out exploring. And they would come back, these are the grandkids now, with stories about what they had seen, the big blue herons and the fish that they had seen and the water plants. And it was like they were discovering all of this. It probably was for the first time, some of them. Either consciously or sometimes unconsciously, I was intent that my kids appreciate the outdoors, that they appreciate nature, that they appreciate the quiet that goes with being outdoors. I did that with my kids. I'm doing that with my grandkids. And I maybe I'm doing more of it with my grandkids. I have more time to do it because I don't have a 9-to-5 job to go to. And I try to do it subtly, to tell a story rather than to say, here are the points I want you to memorize. And interestingly enough, they're picking that up. It's a way of teaching that I guess I have tried to follow. I taught for many years at the university. And I've pretty much been doing that with my grandkids, did that with my kids. My perspective on water goes back, way back to when I was a kid. All of those experiences with my dad going fishing, with my brothers and I going swimming, of cattle not having enough water to drink. All of that helped me develop this tremendous respect for water. And I'm afraid that so many people today in our society see water as an economic commodity, something that is unending, and most of us who study this know better, it's not unending. The supply is not forever abundant. We need to watch that and watch that carefully in our overuse of water. So going way back to the days when I was a kid and learning to respect water, to cherish it, and indeed to see it as something sacred, to today when I'm trying to do that myself with limited water use, but I see so many people around me, and I mean to be judgmental, but so many people who see water as something that's going to economically benefit them and not worry about what it does to the environment, what it does to the aquifers that draw down. Right here on my farm where we're sitting just now, one only has to look at my two ponds, one in back of me, one in front of me, both of which have less than half the water in them that they had as recently as 15 years ago. And I don't want to blame it on the irrigation that takes place in this area. Part of me doesn't want to do that. I'm a farmer. I've known farmers for years. But I also know, in studying the research evidence that's been done in this area, that that is a major contributor to the decline of the aquifer and the disappearance of several feet of the water table. And the thoughtful farmers know this, but there are always those that are not. So doom and gloom I probably sound, but I'm hopeful that more people will recognize that as a problem and begin to talk about it and discuss it and begin to figure out policies that will allow us to put the brakes on some of our overuse of water, some of our inappropriate use of water. And then we see these spills and we see the streams polluted. There needs to be more study at this, but that is a problem. And I don't have the solution to it, but it's happening. The Great Lakes have something like 80%+ of all of the fresh water in North America. Can you believe that? 80%. And those same Great Lakes, the 20-some% of the world's fresh water happens to be in the Great Lakes. But as we look ahead, some predict by as early as 2050, we are going to have a terrific shortage of water in the world, including the United States. We see evidence of it now. California has had a drought that's gone on for almost half a dozen years already. The southwestern states, New Mexico and Arizona, have had drought. And the wildfires in the Northwest, storms where we'll get inches of rain an hour. These are indicators of what we can see coming. But it's very difficult to convince somebody who has just had their car flooded out because of a recent terrific rainstorm that there's going to be a water shortage. And today it's so easy to turn on the spigot and there's the water. And for most of us, it's fresh and it's safe. Increasingly, that will not be so. I think my father would shake his head as I do, and he would probably start telling stories, which was his way. He had a never-ending supply of stories. To celebrate that water is sacred. Without water, death is imminent. And people have to make a living, I understand that. But the broader scheme means we've got to see the relationship of what we're doing to a bigger picture. And that means that we are all in this together. And my dad knew that. Jerry never cursed the rain.